I'm James Dean Bradfield, and this is Inspired by Hara. It feels like I've been hearing the name Victor Hara come out of my speakers since I was 16 years old. From the songs of The Clash, Calexico, and U2, amongst others, I've become captivated by the music and story of Chilean musician Victor Hara. I've made an album called Even in Exile, which is inspired by Hara. I'm not the first artist whose creativity has been fueled by Hara, and I wanted to look deeper at why so many have been influenced by him.
Muchas gracias. This next song is for Victor Hara, for those who fought against injustice and who paid the highest price, even in this building.
I was inspired by what had happened to his life and what he stood for and where he came from and just, you know, standing up all the way until the very end.
The proper protest songs, his, are so heartfelt. It's like there's no rage to them. True activists aren't angry. They're just completely determined and completely sure of themselves.
What I find really striking about Hara is that even with his more kind of aggressive, very topical, very detailed songs, where there's more anger in his voice, it's still quite mellifluous and sort of instantly appealing.
It's not about these small acts of cowardice. It's more about the spirit that he tapped into and how he inspired so many people.
It lifted people up, people who were poor and struggling, or people who were imprisoned, or people who were not seen by the upper class of Chile, not seen by the Pinochets. And Victor did that for Chileans, gave them an identity.
Excuse my Spanish.
This is Bruce Springsteen live on stage in Santiago in September of 2013, singing Manifesto, one of Victor Hara's songs, which was released posthumously in 1974. Like The Clash, U2 and Simple Minds, Springsteen was drawn to the story of the singer and activist tortured and killed by Pinochet's soldiers during the coup in 1973. I'm going to be talking to Oscar-winning actress Emma Thompson, Charlie Burchell from Simple Minds, and Christopher Bruce from the Rombé Dance Company, amongst a host of others, about Hara's influence on culture, music, and the arts more than 40 years on from his murder. From Washington Bullets by The Clash to U2's One Tree Hill, Hara's name and story has an imprint on modern music.
Remember the name the day before the army came. Please remember Victor Hara in the Santiago.
I remember hearing Victor Hara among other names in The Clash song Washington Bullets. It was an exercise I regularly went through whilst listening to The Clash. You'd hear a name like Federico Garcia Lorca in a song like Spanish Bombs, and then somehow, without the internet, you'd find out about the person behind the name. The sleeve notes on Simple Minds' 1989 album Street Fighting Years contains the tribute written in memory of Victor Hara. So, my first conversation is with Charlie Burchell from the band, a fellow member of the Guitarists Union. Was the decision to dedicate Street Fighting Years to Victor Hara taken early on in the process?
No, it wasn't. It was taken in the latter stages of the record. When we were making that record, there was a few tracks that we wrote in the making of it. Like one was Belfast Child. And then we did this Peter Gabriel song, Biko. You know, that was quite spontaneous during the recording of the album. We had no intention of writing a six-minute Celtic ballad or, you know, or using an old folk song. And we didn't really think about using Peter's Biko. But by the time we got towards the end of the album, we started realising that we'd written an album that was actually, I don't really call it a political album, but it was certainly addressing human rights. And in the case of Belfast, it was kind of being optimistic about what the future might hold. Jim came to me at one point and said, look, I think the Street Fighting Years is a great title for the album. And then we'd been involved with Amnesty International on the previous record. We had done quite a lot of leafleting for them at the shows. We'd sort of been doing a lot of work with them, and that's where we heard about Victor, really, for the first time, actually, you know. And it just felt right, James, at the end, when we had that album there. You know, somehow, you know, everything about Victor Hara's, like, just, it kind of sums up what we all feel as artists, in a way. You know, it's very clear with his message, he's very courageous. The fact that he was a guitar player as well, as much as anything, you know, and the whole thing was, you could say it was that we had to dedicate it to him.
A manifesto by, you know, Victor Hara, I think, is probably one of the most beautiful protest or political songs ever written, I think. Do you think that's where Victor Hara's talent lays, where his uniqueness lays, where he writes protest songs that shine rather than shout?
I think you're right. It is one of the most beautiful protest songs ever, you know. I think it's far more potent because of the tone. Quite a lot of protest songs are delivered that way. You know, if you think of Dylan and stuff like that, or the message was far more powerful when it came across like that, and it wasn't, and certainly in Victor Hara's case, it's just that haunt is enough to keep you captivated, and you're really getting his message. It's an astonishing amount of people who have dedicated something to Victor Hara and continue to do it, like yourself, and also his memory will live much longer than any of the torturers and murderers that, you know, ruined his life.
I assume you've played Santiago more than once. Did you ever have the chance to meet Victor's widow, Joan?
Yeah, James, we did. We met one afternoon before we played. The weird thing is we were playing the stadium, the Stade of Chile, or the Victor Hara Stadium, as it is now. And Joan came to meet us. She was happy that we kept the message going, you know, by dedicating the album to him. But it was kind of it's obviously really sad as well, because it's hard to believe when you're sitting in front of somebody who's went through that and continues to, because she still kept, you know, his memory alive. And you're so humbled when you're in front of somebody like that. I think I was a bit overwhelmed by this person in front of me who's been through this. And it was really poignant at the very end, because as she left, she apologised because she couldn't come to the show, because she couldn't go near the place, which is, of course, Understandable.
I tried to cover some horror songs for this record, but I couldn't make the words sit with my delivery. It kind of felt like I was trespassing. It felt like I shouldn't go there. Did you guys ever try to cover any horror songs for Street Fighting Years?
Oh, James, it would have been impossible. I mean, we have a hard time doing acoustic versions of our own songs.
Yeah.
Imagine trying to do one of his, because the music is really complex. But apart from that, I agree with you there. I think it would be, at best, it would probably be a very, very, very poor rendition of something that is, because the track is so haunting, and it's mesmerizing, you know.
But, well, I got around it by covering one of his instrumentals.
Did you?
Yeah. Oh, it's something called La Partida. I kind of extrapolated upon it, but I got around it by thinking, right, the actual words have so much weight and, like, you know, and so much subtextual power behind them as well, because you're competing with his voice. And so I listened to a few of his instrumentals and I thought, I can do that. I can interpret that, because it's not nailed down, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, so.
But Manifesto, the lyrics, I mean, they're so abstract,
yeah,
but it's so clear. And somewhere in all of his music, it was like that. I think there was this surrealism, you know, that was like very typical to Latin America, I think, or South America, you know, magic realism. And somewhere in there, there's just, you can take on a number of levels, a political level, but also the poetry and the images, everything, you know. And funny enough, I play charango, you know the charango?
Yeah, you play.
I've got charango and I love it, dude.
I'll
share it, you know, I really.
I've mastered the record. I should have got you on the record, Charlie.
The charango on it, no problem.
I wanted to include a Victor Jara song on my album, so I attempted to sing Manifesto and Te Recuerdo Amanda, amongst others. The results left me disheartened. The words of Jara made me sound like an empty vessel. While someone like Springsteen somehow conveyed the original sentiment of the words when he sung Manifesto, I simply couldn't. So I decided to record a Jara instrumental instead. La Partida is perhaps more impressionistic than some of Victor's records, but this gave me more freedom to reinterpret the song. The Chilean instruments you hear on the original, the charango, the quena, the siku, all have a more plaintive tone that I chose to try and amplify and widen to achieve a more spectral vista. I had an image of Jara in the Atacama Desert that I was trying to match with the song. Charlie mentioned the stadium where Jara was killed, and while I really don't want to dwell on the gruesome nature of his murder, it would be wrong to ignore it. Pinochet's soldiers tortured him and his hands before they killed him. In their minds, the ultimate penalty for a protest songwriting guitar player. Joey Burns from the American band Calexico wrote a song called Victor Jara's Hands.
The year before we recorded that song, we had toured down in South America. Santiago de Chile is Pacific in its soulfulness. We were fortunate enough to have a day off, and we took a trip down to Valparaiso, and our promoter there on the way down was playing us the music of Victor Jara and telling us a story about his life and what had happened. And being there, hearing his voice, hearing his music, and the story really overwhelmed me and inspired me. So when we went back and we're working on a new record, I wrote this song with our guitar player from Madrid, Jairo Zavala. And he also told me a bit about his life. And we we're just sort of inspired by this powerful personality and figure. It was Victor Jara.
So some of the lines in your song, Victor Jara's Hands, you know, they do jump from the page. Lines like fences that fail and fall to the ground, bearing the fruit from Jara's hands. You know, it does remind you of every picture you see of Victor. It does give off this vision of almost saintliness. You know, I'm not saying he is a saint or that he was a martyr, but his reputation, the history that he's involved in, the tragedy that he's involved in, is a lot to live up to. Does that make it hard to write a song about him?
No, I was inspired by what had happened to his life, and what he stood for, and where he came from, and him just, you know, standing up all the way until the very end. And of course, you know, as the story goes, I mean, he was brutally assassinated. They cut off his hands. And it's a feeble and cowardly attempt at trying to make somebody so powerful seem so small. But I wanted to take that act, and I wanted to give dignity and power to his spirit and his work. And so I wanted to show that it's not about these small acts of cowardice or about what the governments are trying to impose. It's more about the spirit that he tapped into and how he inspired so many people. You know, I didn't want to tell the story that what had happened to his final days or any of the graphic detail, but I wanted to soak up some of that and put it into song that dignifies him.
The thing that strikes me, you know, with Victor is when you reference other protest singers, you know, dogma is never far from the next verse or next chorus. Sometimes it's impossible to you know, to not feel that you're being preached to by a protest song, which is what protest songs are supposed to do sometimes. But with Victor, when you get a song like, you know, Preguntas por Puerto Montt, which is a kind of a reportage song about a grave injustice, it still doesn't feel like he's preaching to you. It still doesn't feel as if he's like nailing you to the ground with his message. There's still something quite beautiful about his delivery. Is that what set him apart from other protest singers?
Yeah, for sure. He came from that background of hearing music from his mother. He was interested in writing plays and standing up for people whose rights were being compromised and were being forgotten or being abused. And so I think that he saw in the power of song the ability to soothe and also inspire. I mean, his voice is just incredible, right? And his songwriting is on par. And he paved the way for this kind of national Chilean songwriting approach. And I think they were able to get to more people by the way of poetry and song and peace, rather than trying to protest and use violence against violence. And so I think he, inspired by a lot of other musicians like Violeta Parra or Pablo Neruda, the poet, you know, he saw this way of peace. And I think he was able to really reach a lot more people because of that.
Yeah, I do think the balance of what, you know, Victor Jara stands for does lie between those two songs, you know, between Preguntas por Puerto Montt and Manifesto. You know, the one is reportage and the one is almost like a psalm or a plea. He has that balance going on. And I suppose you had to be in Victor's position, you know, in Chile in the late 60s and early 70s, leading up to 73. Of course, he wanted to write songs that would soothe people because violence was in the air. And yeah, I suppose you're right, because a democratically elected government was in danger of being overthrown by a bunch of thugs. So yeah, that's a brilliant way of putting it. I haven't thought about that.
I mean, his voice is, he doesn't sound like Chuck D, right?
Bass, how low can you go? Death row, what am I to know? I know, bring the noise, word for word.
You're like, yeah, let's fight the power, you know? And that's a different, that taps into a different spirit of protest. His voice, and I think a lot of people in Chile, they're very peaceful. They're on the Pacific Ocean, you know? They're part of that stretch of land, and I think there's a certain tone to that part of the world. Growing up on the Pacific coast, I identified with that immediately when I landed in Santiago de Chile. And when I got further to the coast, to Valparaíso, and I was walking around one of the homes of Pablo Neruda, you see this poetic beauty, and there's power in tapping into the natural beauty. And I feel when I'm in the Pacific, and when I'm closer to the ocean, there's just a different energy there than there is, say, if you go to the coast in the UK or in Europe. It's just a different kind of energy. What I'm trying to say in the analogy to like Chuck D is that I have not heard him, you know, kind of sing like that where it's enraged. Of course, it's in the words, but his vocal does a certain thing. And I think he followed that natural ability and inclination. It just kind of came out. And with the nylon string guitar, it's all works together in this sort of expression. And so he's being true to himself. He's being true to the instrument, his voice, and the place and the people that's been there for forever. And I feel like Victor Jara, he rose up like a wave, you know, because of this natural ability, his life story, his father leaving and his mother being there to provide, and then his mother died. So he had to make big life decisions early on. And I think he was just very observant. And there are people and artists that are able to do that, and that's why they stand out.
Before I recorded the vocal for Santiago Sunrise, I listened to Manifesto, a Victor Jara song, beforehand. His vocal delivery is surprisingly bathed in some kind of tenderness.
The sentinels are watching as the world begins its day.
I decided to try and let that guide my performance.
Memories of battles lost.
Joey and Charlie have both helped me to think about Hara's influence on modern songwriting, lyrically and musically. But his reach is far bigger than that. Influence in activism and fellow protest singers and the arts. Next time on Inspired by Hara.
A woman who wanted to make a film about Victor asked me to write the script, so it must have been shortly after Sense and Sensibility. And I think the first time I went to Chile to meet Joan and the girls was 97. In 73, when I was at school, two girls came from Chile, and it was Mandy and Manuela. Having endured the murder of their father and then being exiled,
I first met Joan in the late 70s, and she presented me with the book, which was the story of her life in dance and meeting Victor, and of course, the terrible tragedies of the coup. And her story, her book, together with the music, was basically the inspiration for the piece.